Hi, listener. If you tend to enjoy sparkling wine only on special occasions, such as the holidays, and you just want an overview of what makes a champagne different from sparkling wine and how to choose between them, then you may want to hear this casual conversation I had with the World Wine Guys, Mike DeSimone and Jeff Jensen. We discuss some of the basics and offer insider tips on how to enjoy sparkling wines during the holidays. This is the Inside Wine Podcast. I'm Joe Janisch, a certified specialist of wine and a wine industry professional since 1996, giving you the inside information to make the right wine decisions. Today we have two special guests, Mike and Jeff, Mike DeSimone, Jeff Jensen. They are wine experts, wine book authors, entertaining and lifestyle gurus. They've been seen on Martha Stewart, The Today Show, Good Day New York, CNN. You've probably read their articles in Forbes, Wine Enthusiast, Rob Report, a host of others. And today I brought them on because it is the holiday season. We are recording this around mid-December in 2020, and we want to talk about sparkling wine. So welcome, Mike and Jeff. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Joe. This is Mike speaking right now, and we are very happy to be here.
And this is Jeff speaking. And Joe, thanks for having us. I really appreciate it. And you'll probably hear Mike talk a lot because he basically always does that. So I'll just be here. Yeah, there we go. You got to love the rim shot.
Jeff is here to cut me off when I start rambling.
I am.
You might not be able to.
I'm here to keep him on the straight and narrow path of staying with one train of thought.
But, I will do my best. Yes. But, you know, look, it's the holidays, and I think that bubbles are or bubbles is a really easy train to get on.
Mm-hmm. You know? It's a nice train to get on.
It's a good train to get on. There's a lot of great sparkling wine from many, many different places in the world. Certainly, I think, actually, I was just working on an article earlier this week, and I know some ridiculously high percentage of all the sparkling wine that's sold around the world is sold during the month of December.
This is
when people are really drinking it, which is a great thing. I also think that's a shame because I feel that bubbles make, whether it be champagne or cava or Prosecco, or Frangiacorta, or a California sparkling wine, or, you know, I don't know, a South African sparkling wine, or a Turkish sparkling wine, or sparkling wine from anywhere. I just think that sparkling wine makes any occasion festive and extra special.
See what I mean? I can hardly get a word in edgewise. But no. Can I just say that, you know, this is 2020. It's been a very challenging year for a lot of people. And I'm really happy to do this with you, Joe, because I do believe that bubbles are festive. And I think we need a little, you know, happiness this year. And if we can open a bottle of bubbles, whether it's Prosecco or champagne or, you know, cava, I think it's a really nice way to start. So thanks for having us on today.
Absolutely. And I agree. And I've never seen anyone have a glass of bubbles and not be smiling. So I think that's a big thing, especially this year, 2020. We've had a rough one. Both of you have mentioned sparkling wines from so many different places. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring you two on, because you are the experts. And some people think that champagne and sparkling wine are synonymous, and that's really not the case. And I wanted you guys to come on and kind of explain how maybe champagne is not necessarily sparkling wine from California, is not necessarily cava, is not necessarily Prosecco.
Right.
Maybe you could just give us a real, like, 50,000 foot overview of, you know, some of the main ones, and then maybe we'll get into talking about when you would choose which one, for what occasion, for what price point, things like that.
So basically, you want a flyover.
Okay, yeah,
flyover. I'll give you one. The French have been very, very serious about champagne has to come from Champagne, right, France. And it's a DO thing. It's AOC. So it's the origin. We're looking at the origin of where that sparkling wine comes from. So all sparkling wine is not champagne, but champagne is always a sparkling wine, with few exceptions. Right. There's some people make
still
wines.
Yes, there's the Côte de Champenois still white, but let's not confuse.
Probably not seeing that.
Right, exactly. We're not seeing too many of those. Those you can find in little pubs and tavernas, you know, and tabacs in France. But that said, champagne is the most festive. It's the one that has the most marketing. It's the one that everybody knows. And so many people call Prosecco and Cava and sparkling wine from California champagne. And it's not right, but, you know, they're really referring to the fact that it's a bubbly wine. So champagne comes only from Champagne, France. Prosecco, you have DOC and DOCG, which is denomination of origin controlled or denomination of origin controlled guaranteed. So Prosecco, again, comes from one region in northern Italy. Cava, again, comes from in Spain, one region, or actually a couple regions in Spain, but it has to come from Spain in order to be called Cava. Sparkling wine, on the other hand, is a broader terminology. We can call sparkling wine from California. We can call sparkling wine from New Jersey, sparkling wine from New York State. And those are lovely
sparkling wines. Have you ever had a sparkling wine from New Jersey, Jeff?
Actually, I have. I think it was sparkling blueberry wine.
I had the same one. I had the Renault Winery, you know, I think.
I think it was, you know, down in like down by Cape May or something, right?
It's down south.
And I remember drinking it, you know, as I would say as a younger man in my 20s. And I thought it was the best thing. Now that, you know, I'm a few years older, I think champagne and Prosecco and Cava and California sparkling, those are the best things.
Yeah.
But so just to be clear, champagne comes from Champagne, France. Cava comes from the regions approved in Spain. Prosecco comes from approved regions in Italy. And the terminology sparkling wine could be anywhere. You could have sparkling wine from Bulgaria, sparkling wines from the country of Georgia, the state of Georgia, the state of California. And but they're all fun, Joe. That's the most important thing. All of these sparkling wines are fun. You open the bottle and it's a celebration.
I actually think, I feel like maybe I'm inspired because I'm looking out the window at our Christmas lights. But I actually feel like when you look at a glass of sparkling wine and you see the bubbles rising up and everything, and you know you're at a holiday party or a dinner or something, and there's candlelight and everything, it's kind of like bubbles. The bubbles in sparkling wine are like holiday lights. They just, it's like magical. You said, Jeff, they make people smile.
Yeah,
they really do. It's, you know, everybody smiles with that. And I'm going to add on to what Jeff has said. There's, you know, there are different sparkling wine in different regions in the world. And it's the old world regions that actually have the names. So when you look at France, you have Champagne. And then of course there's the Cremants, which are sparkling wine from other regions in France. So you've got Cremant d'Alsace from the Alsace region, Cremant de Loire, Cremant de Bourgogne. I'm most definitely forgetting at least one.
I'm sure there's a few more Cremants.
But then
Cremant de Limoux.
Yeah, Cremant de Limoux, exactly. And the AOC regulations regarding what grapes can go into that. So champagne, as we know, is generally some combination of or a single varietal of the Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier. There are rules about the aging. A vintage champagne has to be aged for at least 3 years before release. Most champagne is non-vintage. And then, you know, you move to Italy, and in Italy, besides Prosecco...
Let's come back to the difference between vintage and non-vintage when you're done with this.
But then, you've got Prosecco,
when
but also in Italy,
minutes.
You've got Frangiacorta, you've got Trento DOC, you know, so you have like these other things, and, you know, in Prosecco is made with a grape called Glera. A lot of the Trento DOC wines are Chardonnay-based. You get into Spain, and you've got three main grapes, which are Macabeo, Parellada, and Jarello.
Yep.
But you can also, we actually had one the other day that was 70% Chardonnay,
and then
30% combination of the other three grapes. So that's permitted. Pinot Noir is permitted in Cava as well. But then when you get to the New World, when you get to California, right? You've got California sparkling.
Almost anything goes.
But, right. So basically, there can be anything. And in general, with the exception of Lambrusco, I think, in general, sparkling wines are white or their rosé. There's not a lot of red sparkling wine out there in the world. Although there was a notable Australian sparkling Shiraz.
I remember that.
That was a thing for about five minutes.
I remember that.
For about 5 minutes.
And know, I also a, remember red 90s. Sparkling wine. When I was, again, in college, we had, I won't say the brand name, but it was Bum Lambrusco, and it went great with everything, including pizza and hot dogs.
But but when we get out of the European regions, you call the sparkling wine by the region. You call it by the region it came from.
Okay.
And so you know champagne is made with these grapes. It's made in this style. It's made in the method traditionnel or the method
champenoise,
which is... So the majority of sparkling wine is made with a second fermentation in the bottle. So first it's made as still wine, and it is made in stainless steel tanks. And then it goes into the bottle, and a small amount of sugar and yeast is added into that wine in the bottle. And then it is capped, and it's actually capped with a soda cap. The old flip top
soda bottle.
Okay. And your second fermentation, what causes the bubbles, is done in the bottle. That's your traditional method.
Well, there's an interesting side note to this one, because most people believe there's a couple different legends around champagne, but the one that's probably the most true is that a winemaker was making just wine, and theoretically or supposedly the wine started fermenting in the bottle on its own the second time, which is not supposed to happen if you're a good winemaker.
Right.
But supposedly he was blind. And when he drank the wine, instead of saying, oh my God, this is horrible, this had a second fermentation in the bottle, he said, I feel as if I can see the stars in heaven, because he felt the bubbles on his tongue. So it's kind
see
of
Christmas
really,
lights.
It's really kind of, it's a kind of nice story, about champagne. And most people believe that, that's partially true. There was a second fermentation that wasn't supposed to happen.
So it was a mistake.
Exactly. So they kind of liked the style, and then they started, a lot of winemakers started making wine in this style. So bubbly wine. But oh my God, there's so many great quotes about champagne. My other favorite ones is
Napoleon. The other one is Napoleon said, in victory you deserve champagne, in defeat you need it.
Yes. And I think one of my other favorite ones, Madame Pompadour said, champagne is the only wine a woman can drink and still remain beautiful.
Yes.
So that's another interesting. So there's a lot of legends around champagne. When we're talking about sparkling wine, the ultimate sparkling wine is champagne. And that doesn't mean that a sparkling wine from California is not good, because there are some brands in California that are using the same method champenoise, using the same grapes, Chardonnay
a lot of the well-known California sparkling houses were founded by French champagne houses.
Exactly. So that's the really nice thing. So some of the California sparkling wines are really good quality as well. So when we talk about sparkling, everyone thinks about champagne, but there are other ones. And then there's reasons why you might want a champagne versus a Prosecco. And then there's reasons you might want a cava versus a champagne. And we certainly can talk a little bit about that if you'd like to.
Yeah, what I'm thinking is champagne has the aura, and you started to get into talking about how it's made, and I can now understand why it's a little more expensive. Mm-hmm. So for people who have a champagne desires but a Prosecco budget, I guess we need to start thinking about, for the holidays, why would you choose specifically a champagne, or instead shift over to a sparkling wine from California, for example? And you mentioned that sparkling wines from California can be very good. It sounds like they already know what they're doing. I know, I work with one of those French producers, Tattinger, that created Domaine Carneros.
Exactly. Well, that's one of my favorite California wine producers, that's for sure. And actually, Tête en Jet is one of my favorite go-to champagnes. Tête en Jet, for the quality, in my opinion, is a well-priced champagne that you're not skipping on quality. You're not. It's just one of those champagnes that, for me, always delivers.
I do think some of the larger champagne houses that are out there, you just said it's more expensive to produce, Joe, and it certainly is, because it is more, it has to be aged longer than a lot of wines, and it's not just aging, it's taking up a lot of real estate. It's not just aging in a barrel, or, it is actually aging in bottles, and it's aged in, in riddling racks. It's aged on these racks that look like doors with holes cut in them, and the bottles are placed into them, and now they're actually
some are still done by hand.
Some are still done, and it's usually your very higher end vintage champagnes, right, or from a very small family owned house. They still turn the bottles
a quarter turn by hand daily.
But then there are also machines that there's like these gyrators.
I think they're called gyro pallets.
Yeah, gyro pallets.
And actually, pallets. Oh boy.
Yeah, it looks like a crane. It's like a small robotic crane that picks
up. Doesn't sound romantic.
No, it doesn't. Exactly. That picks up a cage filled with wine and shakes it.
But when you see hundreds and hundreds of bottles of champagne picked up on a crane in this gyro pallet to kind of turn it, it's still a pretty impressive feat. And all I can think of when I see that happening is like, oh my God, what if that little tractor drops all that champagne? It would be wild. Yeah, totally wild.
But I do think, though, that for a lot of the brands, although, like we said, it takes up a lot of real estate in the wineries and it's labor intensive, but for some champagnes that are very well known, what people are really paying for are those splashy advertisements in lifestyle magazines, in fashion magazines, and men's magazines and women's magazines, full page ads, really trying to sell people on the lifestyle of drinking a particular champagne, which we can all get behind. But honestly, I feel like we're champions more of the wineries that don't have those enormous advertising budgets and might put their money into making good quality champagne and paying someone to go down and turn every bottle by hand every day.
Exactly. I volunteered a few times to just lock me in the cellars.
Yeah, but you go down with your own opener. And
I'd go down with my own opener. That's for sure. But, again, champagne is one of those things that it just – you feel really good when you're drinking a glass of champagne and sharing a bottle of champagne with your family and friends. I think it's a party when you open a bottle. And to just kind of talk about some of the other bubbly wines we talked about, Cava, to me, is a really wonderful celebratory bottle to open as well. And a lot of Cavas are extremely well-priced. Spanish wines seem to offer a really good value. And as Mike said, usually it's Pareada, Jarello, and Macabeo, those three grapes, which don't sound at all like Chardonnay or Pinot Noir, but they make really crisp, clean, mineral-driven, bubbly wines that go great, like with oysters, for example, or caviar, or a shrimp cocktail, and those things that, really, really nice. A lot of times people, want to have champagne with caviar, and they want to have champagne with oysters. And sometimes some champagnes are too oaky. And in my opinion, they don't go with that really austere, briny seafood. Whereas cavas seem to work really well as long as they're staying with those grapes. And like we just had one the other day that was about 70% Chardonnay. And it was a stunning, stunning example of a cava. But again, I probably wouldn't have that with oysters or caviar or shrimp. I would have that with more of a creamy, maybe a fish in a cream sauce, or even with a little bit of like creamy desserts, like a creme brulee or a flan.
But I also think when you talk about pairing, I think sometimes as soon as you start getting into the oysters and caviar, those are two examples of luxury foods that a lot of people are turned off by. As much as everybody who loves oysters and everybody who loves caviar. There were people who were like, ooh, they can't get past the, you know, the texture, the taste kind
of
thing.
How about spaghetti and, linguine with clam sauce?
Exactly. Linguine with clam sauce or shrimp scampi.
Who doesn't love lobster?
Jeff and I certainly are aware that potato chips and what's known as French onion dip, where you take a small container of sour cream and a packet of French onion soup mix and you stir them together and you get some rippled potato chips and you dip those in.
Yep.
That goes really, really well with a bottle of champagne.
It does.
Champagne, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you're actually getting into a part of this conversation where I really wanted to go. There are many people who think that champagne or sparkling wine just you can only have it like as a toast and only on its own. I think it's kind of a surprise to some people that you can really pair it with foods and maybe even enjoy it throughout a main meal and even dessert.
I mean, we've been to actually in the Champagne region. We have gone to several very nice restaurants and we've been to, you know, pairing dinners in New York as well, where they pair champagne all through the meal. And if you think it, first of all, if you look at the main grapes in Champagne, if you look at Pinot Noir and Chardonnay are extremely food friendly. So as a sparkling wine, it still should be equally food friendly. And besides that, you know, the seafood, and I know we also talked about like potato chips. You could actually have
popcorn.
It goes well with, but they all don't taste the same. If you've got one that's got like really good, bright acidity and a lot of those citrus notes, that goes really good with a salad with goat cheese on it, for example. I know Cava, we've had Cava and artichokes. We were having lunch with a winemaker in Spain and he kind of was like, oh, our next course is artichokes. And I never know what to pair with it. And they say that artichokes aren't really, you know, aren't wine friendly and that. I was like, Cava, it's got that, it's earthy and it's got those like yeasty brioche and baking bread notes and that kind of thing. And it's interesting because it was a winemaker who at the time was only making Cava for like family parties for weddings and baptisms and that kind of stuff. And they wound up actually exporting it to the U.S. and selling it kind of based on the fact that we were like, this is so food friendly. People would love this.
So that's what we call consulting.
Free consulting.
101. free consulting.
No extra charge. Okay.
Yeah. But it was a very nice lunch.
I mean, champagne goes great with, a roast chicken. If you just take a simple roast chicken and whatever your condiments of choice are, whether it's like Herbe de Provence or whether you just do like garlic and lemon and salt or whatever, and put the chicken in the oven for about an hour and roast it and have a bottle of champagne.
Or California sparkling.
Right. Yeah. Or California sparkling with, but with a roast chicken with either roast potatoes or French fries, that's a great pairing as well.
Mm, yeah. Sounds good. It sounds really good. You're hitting on a lot of different dishes that people will have in the holidays. Yeah. Let's help out the listener who only drinks sparkling wine around the holidays and give them some guidance. Like, you know, it probably doesn't make sense to go out and buy a vintage champagne if it's like you only do it once a year and you're not as familiar with the different houses and this and that. Let's say like, you know, you're on a budget.
Yeah.
You want to buy a bottle of champagne. Mm-hmm. You want to buy a bottle of Prosecco or Cava. Can we give a little guidance on like what they should look for when buying a champagne this time of year and buying some other things and when they should serve those?
Absolutely. You know, a lot of Italians and especially Italian Americans in New York celebrate, you know, the Feast of the Seven Fishes.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's a really fun thing. I'm going to tell you, with the Feast of the Seven Fishes, it's a feast. So first of all, you're eating all this amazing food, but you probably don't want to spend the money on a champagne. And especially, you know, traditional Italian families, maybe not in 2020, we're not going to have so many people around the table, but, you know, traditional Italian families, 20, 25 people around the table. You see the whole family together, and as much as you'd love to spend the money on champagne, you might not want to do it. So that's where Prosecco works really, really well for me. In fact, I just had some spaghetti carbonara the other day with a fantastic Prosecco. And, you know, spaghetti carbonara is not, you know, one of the Feast of the Seven Fishes.
That's dishes. The Feast of the Seven Bacons.
That's the Feast of the Seven Bacons, yeah.
Can we get, that should be a thing.
That's the seven, that's the seven little pigs, yeah.
Yeah.
But spaghetti carbonara is fantastic with a Prosecco. And a Prosecco that's maybe aged a little bit more. So look for a DOCG versus a DOC, something that's, you know, has a little bit more of a provenance with it. And again, Prosecco, you can find Prosecco for $11, $12, you know, $15 a bottle, whereas champagne, you're going to need to get to the $30, $40 and up per bottle. So Prosecco, I think, goes great with the Feast of the Seven Fishes, goes great with like linguine and clam sauce, a spaghetti carbonara, for example. Or if you're just putting out an antipasta and you're having like, you know, some prosciutto, some salami or salumi, you're having some olives and stuffed peppers and stuff like that, that's where a Prosecco is really, really nice. And it's not going to break the bank. You know, it's not going to bust the budget. You know, you kind of have to look at the food you're going to eat and how many people are going to be around the table and kind of figure out what works for you. As we said in the beginning, a lot of sparkling wine is sold during this month, but you know, these are, a lot of people don't go out and buy sparkling wine every day, so they don't need to go out and buy a vintage champagne, unless of course they want to, and they had a good year. And you know what? Anyone who's listening should be talking about celebrating their health and good fortune and making it through 2020. So maybe get a nice, you know, champagne. But Mike has a different opinion.
I'm of two minds this year, because people in 2020, I think more than many other years, people have various sets of circumstances. Some people are lucky enough to still be working from home. The other thing is, because we're seeing smaller groups gathering, this may be the year that it's just, you know, it's just you and your wife and your kids at the table kind of thing. And so you might actually look and say, well, hey, I'm lucky, I'm still working, and it's a holiday, and let's celebrate. And since we're not pouring for a whole big crowd of people who are not going to appreciate it, let's drink the good stuff. So that's where you might want to say, hey, you know what? Let's get a bottle of vintage champagne this year. Let's splurge on that and have something special with our dinner. And I mean, you could drink a vintage champagne with a loin of pork, as I said, a roast chicken, with ham, with any kind of pasta, with a mushroom sauce or cream sauce. On the other hand, again, still gathering it in small groups, there are people who are not so lucky, who are, you know, some people who work freelance are doing a lot less work than normal. Many, many people have lost their jobs. And so that's where you look at the, you know, like your value sparkling wine, as Jeff talked about Prosecco, but also Cava. I mean, there's a lot of really good Prosecco and Cava that comes in at well under $20 a bottle. I mean, you know, there's a lot of, the sweet spot is like 13, 14, 15. And again, if you're having four people over, you could buy four bottles of Cava.
As long as those people aren't driving.
But you could buy, well, you know, you want backup just in case, but you could buy three or four bottles of Cava for the beginning price, for the price of an okay champagne.
Champagne. Yeah, so, you know.
Right. But so if it's been a tough year, you can still celebrate the fact that it's the holidays, the fact that you are with your, you know, your nuclear family, your quarantine bubble, your close friends.
You know, the same people that you've been with for the last 7 months.
But you're actually not going to be wearing your pajamas. You're going to put on a pair of like hard pants with a waistband and
your Christmas pajamas.
There you go, your Christmas pajamas.
Christmas pajamas.
Exactly. Exactly. But so again, we're looking at a lot of different circumstances. If your circumstances are good this year and you're looking and you're like, oh, I'm not going to have my mom who only drinks sweet wine, my cousin who turns their nose up at anything that is not a Sonoma Pinot Noir, my other cousin who will drink anything that has alcohol listed somewhere on the label, that kind of thing.
And don't forget about the idiot brother-in-law who thinks he knows everything about wine.
You know, and we all have that. Or, you know, Uncle Steve who only drinks red wine, and that's it. You can kind of be like, hey, you know what? It's just us. Let's be cool and let's have it. We deserve a really good bottle and we don't have to share it with anyone. Or it's like, I do deserve to drink something good and the year's been tough and I can buy a $15 or $18 bottle of sparkling wine or a $25 bottle of California sparkling wine.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Mike, you really bring up a great point because there will be a lot of people with much smaller gatherings and to your point, maybe just, you know, you and your significant other. And if you've enjoyed non-vintage champagnes in the past and you want to splurge this year, go ahead, get a vintage. And I'm under the impression that pretty much any vintage champagne is going to be excellent because they only make it in certain years, correct?
Exactly. That is correct.
They only make it
what they call exceptional years. Vendage exceptionnel.
And in fact, because the best vineyards in Champagne are in what's known as the Côte de Blanc, that's where the Premier Cru and Grand Cru vineyards are. There's also a lot of very good vintage Blanc de Blanc Champagne, which is champagne that's made with 100% Chardonnay. Which kind of ticks off a lot of boxes for some people.
It works for me.
I could be making this up, but isn't Chardonnay like the most popular grape in the world? Right?
Am I right about that? I think it is.
Yeah. So if you're there's actually non-vintage Blanc de Blanc made by a lot of houses as well. But if you're a person who loves Chardonnay, then you take it and you compound it and add to it. We always say, take something good, add something good, add something good. It's got to be good. And so, you know, you take the fact that it's Chardonnay, that it's from what are considered to be the finest growing areas in Champagne. So probably some of the best vineyard in the world. And then it's made, painstakingly made and meticulously handcrafted by an excellent Champagne house. You're going to get something wonderful in that bottle.
This is making me thirsty.
Me too. I think we need to pop open a bottle.
Really? For sure.
I think there's a 2007 Comte de Champagne downstairs somewhere.
Oh, that's a good one. I'm going to go grab that.
In fact, I have the Blanc de Blanc and the Rosé.
I'm going to tell you, I would say opening except it's not cold, and I'm not going to waste a good bottle of champagne. It's not at the right temperature.
All right.
And, you know, that's another thing we can talk about, Joe. Like, a lot of people, in my opinion, don't serve wines at the right temperature. You know, champagne, sparkling wines, in my opinion, are meant to be cold, like very cold. Like when it snows, stick the bottles in the snow. You know, I want that to be really crisp and clean and almost give me that, what we called when we were kids, a slurpy headache, you know.
Slurpy freeze,
you know, when you drink your slurpy too fast and, you know, you get that brain freeze. And champagnes, you know, let's face it, you're going to be drinking it inside where it's warm. It'll warm up. The glass will warm up and you'll be able to get some of the beautiful nuances of that champagne or that wine. I happen to like my sparkling wines at a colder temperature than I like my still wines, my still Chardonnays, my still Rieslings, for example. And then as far as
Hence the ice bucket. I mean,
hence the ice bucket. And then, you know, for red wines, you know, so many people drink red wines at what's considered room temperature. And, you know, room temperature is a bad translation of the French cellar temperature. And cellars are mostly 50, 55 degrees in French chateaus and stuff. And when
I don't know a lot of people who live in French chateaus.
Exactly.
I know a few,
what I'm suggesting is room temperature for us in the States is 75 degrees. So in my opinion, that's too warm to drink your red wine. So take your wines and put them in the refrigerator for a little bit, 20 minutes or so to just cool it down. But for sparkling wine, I like them nice and cold. And I think that's something people should always consider, that if you're going to serve a sparkling wine, a champagne, a Prosecco, make it nice and cold. Don't be the person that when somebody walks in your house and they hand you a bottle of Prosecco or champagne as a house gift, don't be the person who opens it right away. Chill that down before you open it, because, you know, warm bubbles,
not a good warm.
Not,
yeah,
not my
warm
favorite. Bu- not
in
my
general,
favorite
warm bubbles are not a good thing.
They should be nice and cold.
Okay,
I think so.
Yeah, and as long as we're on the subject of serving, do you need to have those fancy champagne flutes, or like, what's the best vessel for a bubbly wine?
You know, it
anything but your coffee cup.
Really, anything but your coffee cup. Although, if you're at work, put it in your coffee cup.
Yes.
So nobody knows. No, actually, although we have champagne flutes have been like ubiquitous, I think, through our lifetimes, there's been a real movement the past few years to move to drink champagne and better sparkling wines out of a white wine glass, a broader mouthed glass. Because what happens,
unless you can get your nose
right. So the flutes are really nice because they're narrow at the bottom.
And they're elegant.
And they're very elegant, and you can really appreciate that column of bubbles rising up. So I think flutes are really nice if there's just like a toast at an event, and you've got waiters and they're passing out and everyone gets one, and you're just gonna stand there and have it and look at it. But if you're actually like really drinking it and want to appreciate it, a wine glass will actually move the liquid, move the champagne when you drink it over your whole palate. Mm-hmm. A flute, when you drink from it, because it's so small, it goes only over the middle of your tongue and the middle of your taste buds. It smells really good because that small, narrow glass concentrates the scent compounds and the aromas. And so you actually will be like, oh, you'll get like that baking bread and that green apple and that lemon rind and everything. You'll get that like right on your nose and be like, wow, this is going to be really special. And then it actually kind of tickles your tongue, whereas the wider the Chardonnay glass, or we sometimes even drink out of a larger Cabernet Sauvignon glass as well, it's going to wash it over your whole palate. You're really going to appreciate the full taste of that wine much better.
Interesting. And do you swirl it?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
No, you give it, you might want to give it a, when you're your first sniff, you might want to just give the glass, like tilt the glass back and forth a little bit just to release the scent compounds. But actually by swirling a sparkling wine, actually you're going to get this like big kind of rush of alcohol and effervescence is going to
come. And all the bubbles are going to go.
And you're going to lose the bubbles as well. So.
And that's the whole point, kind of the bubbles.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you know, bubbles, I mean, one of the things people talking about serving champagne, Joe, people always kind of feel like, and I've always, you know, in visiting a lot of winemakers, they kind of say, once you open up a bottle of champagne, you have to finish it. There's no such thing as corking up the bottle again. And I found that to be true for a while, but I have to tell you lately, if you don't feel like drinking that whole bottle, you can buy a nice champagne recorker. It's a kind of cork that has these latches that holds the
right to go under the rim on top of the bottle.
Onto the bottle, so it's not going to shoot off, you know, because of the gas. And a bottle of champagne or sparkling wine will keep for a couple of days in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go past 2 or 3 days. But say, for example, if you know, you want to have a toast on New Year's Eve, but you don't feel like drinking the whole bottle, open that bottle of champagne and pour a couple of glasses out and then put a champagne recorker on it. And then you can have a glass of wine with your breakfast, you know, on New Year's Day, glass of champagne, you know. And so the nice thing about champagne is that it will keep its bubbles, and sparkling wines generally do too.
Champagne, speaking of New Year's Day, champagne and sparkling wine goes really well with egg dishes.
Oh, yeah.
So if it's the holidays and, you know, again, a lot of people, it's just them and their, you know, their partner, significant other. And you kind of look and like Jeff just said, with a recorker, you can keep a bottle of champagne or a bottle of sparkling wine in the fridge for a couple of days. Have that, you know, have that glass if you want, if you're not going to drink it all through the meal on the holiday, the night before, and say Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve or, whatever you're celebrating. And, then the next morning you can finish it off. It's great with champagne, is great with bacon and eggs. It's great with
the next morning, as long as it's after 11 in the morning.
Exactly.
You have to have some decorum.
It's called brunch.
I love a glass of sparkling. What's that? I love a glass of sparkling wine with, I'm a New Yorker, so just give me a really good bagel with some cream cheese and some lox, some Nova Scotia salmon. And just give me that for, like, you know, the day after. And if you're a little, if you maybe ate or drank too much the night before, the carbohydrates and the bagel kind of like help relax your stomach. The cream cheese, that fat kind of like, you know, calms down your system. And who doesn't love, you know, salmon, you know, and with a glass of champagne, it's just really a nice way to start your New Year's Day or your Christmas Day.
Yeah, we generally, we're not this year for obvious reasons, but we generally have in New York a large New Year's Day party with somewhere around 50 or 60 people.
Yeah.
And we start at 3 in the afternoon with 3 dozen bagels, and we put out bagels, lox, cream cheese, butter, capers, tomato slices, onion slices, and we usually go through about 3 to 4 cases of sparkling
not
wine.
Not us personally.
Of this sparkling is our 50 wine. Case. That's our 50 to 60 people. We do 3 to 4 cases of sparkling wine, and then actually after it gets dark, sometime around 6:30 or so, we bring out a baked pasta dish and we move into red.
But Joe, as you know, Mike is Italian, so
yes.
Any holiday without pasta is not really
not a holiday. It's actually not a holiday.
It's so, not a day, actually.
Really?
It's not a day. I like that. If I had a rim shot, Joe, I'd give you the rim shot on that one.
There you go. Yeah.
Could you give yourself a rim shot, please? Thank you.
There we
have it. All right.
So one last thing, since we've now moved the sparkling wine from the evening into the morning and early afternoon, please confirm something for me. If people want to mix orange juice or something like that with their sparkling wine, please make sure it's not champagne you're mixing it with.
Yeah, you know what? I agree. Unless you're a millionaire and and you have no taste buds. But I really feel like champagne should be drunk on its own. And by the way, I feel like Prosecco and Cava should all be drunk on their own as well, because that winemaker has painstakingly crafted that bubbling, you know, wine in your glass to taste really good on its own. So let's say you have, you know, your aunt over, your grandmother who doesn't want to drink a lot. It's fine to add some champagne to their Prosecco or Cava. But, you know, if grandma wants a mimosa, you know, open up that bottle of Prosecco. I don't think there's not a good reason to waste perfectly good champagne by mixing it with orange juice. Or
I'm not a real fan of mimosas because they're very orange juice heavy. I have actually nothing against Kir Royale, sparkling wine, Cremant de Bourgogne, which is sparkling wine from Burgundy. And again, those are really good values. There's a lot of them that run around $25 range. And that with a little Chambord. Right?
Yep, yeah.
Chambord. Yeah. Chambord. Yeah, put a little of that in the bottom, or creme de cassis in the bottom of the glass, and then you fill that with Cremant de Bourgogne. So you're enhancing the flavor of the sparkling wine. You're not completely masking it with juice. Right.
That's what we call gilding the lily, Mike.
Exactly.
Gilding
the lily. But you know what's kind of nice, though, too? If you have a Prosecco or you have a Cava and you want to make it festive for the holiday,
I was
a bartender for many, many years. And instead of a mimosa, I like what we call a poinsettia. And it's a little bit of cranberry juice in a sparkling wine. It gives it that pink color. It kind of looks festive, you know.
It's fun.
Yeah, so it's just fun. But, yeah, please.
Again, it should be with an inexpensive
wine. Yeah, with an inexpensive wine. Don't put orange juice and cranberry juice and the good stuff. And by the way, for all the listeners out there who think that they might want to do that, send me the good stuff. I'll drink it for you, and I will send you 2 or 3 bottles of Prosecco or Cava in return.
So, wow.
I have absolutely nothing against mimosa, and if somebody wants a mimosa, that's great. But I just think back to one New Year's Day, and I brought a bottle of a Tête de Cuvée that was probably at retail well over, you know, $150 or more.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people at the table took that bottle, poured it into their glass, and then poured orange juice right over it. And I died a little inside. And I just said,
yeah,
no, well, just please don't do that.
You know what? Well, that person is a savage.
Well, that's the same person that's going to sit at a table and drink Coca-Cola with like linguine and clam sauce.
Exactly.
You know? So yeah,
that's a good point.
You know, it's
probably not our listener.
No,
in other words.
Probably not. Not the wine. It's not the wine curious person. Yeah. Even.
Probably not.
I remember sitting at dinner one time with a guy that we were, you know, doing some business with, and he actually had in front of him a glass of red wine, a glass of Diet Coke, and he was chewing on, I guess it was Nicorette.
It was Nicorette,
kind of,
yeah.
Like nicotine gum.
And
between, you know, bites of food, he would actually put the gum on his plate, and that was enough to make me sick. But then then he actually mixed the red wine and the Coke together. And in Spain, they drink that during festivals and fiestas called the Calimocho.
See, that's sparkling
and,
wine.
But that's,
it's another way to have sparkling wine, yeah.
Yeah, but it just kind of, I died a little inside that day too. So I know how you're feeling, Joe. The listener who's gone a half hour with us on this podcast has an interest in wine, and I don't think any of the listeners out there would ever do that. But we all have people in our families, you know, we have our aunts and uncles and grandmothers and grandfathers that might do that. And that's why
this year especially, you can say, hey, we're not seeing other people because of the health situation. And then you don't have to worry that anyone's going to do that with your good bottle of champagne.
That's a good point. Good point.
That's true. And if your lovely wife tries to do that with champagne, have her call me. I'll give her a slap on the wrist.
There you go.
But
that won't happen with my wife.
Okay.
Knowing your lovely wife, she would never do
that. She'd never do that.
We know that for sure.
No, she's educated and respectful of the bubbles.
And lovely, by the way. So all good.
Thank you very much. Thank you. So I think we've covered just about everything that we need to from the 50,000 foot view. Just any parting thoughts, or you want to have any, what will you two be pouring as far as bubbles go this holiday season?
Oh gosh.
I think there will be at least one bottle of good vintage champagne, because I think we're spending New Year's Eve alone, I believe. So that'll probably be that night. There'll be bubbles. There's going to be some cava. There is going to be some prosecco.
And there's going to be seafood.
There's a lot of seafood in our lives. So there's going to be bubbles all through the season, not just on the holiday, because opening a bottle of bubbles makes any occasion festive.
Yeah.
It certainly does. It certainly does.
Great. Here's a toast to us and to the new year and the holiday season. Mike and Jeff, thanks so much for joining me today.
Joe, cheers. And to you and your family. And, you know, we've made it this far through 2020. We're going to make it through 2021. And I think we're going to come out the other side a lot better off. So drink the good stuff. Enjoy the bubbles. And every time you open up a bottle, you know, make it a festive occasion, because we have a lot to be thankful for.
I agree with all that. And to everyone who has stuck with us this far in the podcast, thanks for listening and cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you. Hey, you're still with us. Thanks so much for hanging with us to hear the entire conversation. I hope you learned something that'll make your sparkling wine choices a little easier this holiday season. To learn more about Mike and Jeff, please check the show notes. You can also visit wine365.com for more wine tips for the holiday and beyond. I'll be back with another episode in about 2 weeks. In the meantime, please remember, wine is food. It comes from a place. Enjoy it responsibly.